Welcome to the Mindful Man Project, where we discuss issues, wins, losses, and learnings of men today. We leave no stone unturned, no avenue unexplored. The time is now for men across the globe to take stock, know who they are, to stand in their power, to guide those men coming behind us into the future. Creating a world that our children and our children's children will thrive and flourish, as we have done the work before. I'm your host, Tyson Mavis. Welcome. On today's episode, I have Matt Roski, founder of Cultivate Elevate. He founded Cultivate Elevate to bring back information that has been suppressed and caused our society to become sicker and weaker. His mission is to educate and empower individuals to rise above the state of fear because there are always solutions. In this episode, we discuss the method of electroculture for farming and agricultural purposes, which is creating huge yields in some respects. I know for myself in our garden, we're doing the same thing and it's been working a treat. So lots of information about that. And we also dive into the products that Matt has to offer on his website, Cultivate Elevate. So without further ado, strap yourself in. Let's go. Welcome, Matt. Today on today's show, I have Matt Roski, as you would have heard in the introduction. Welcome, Matt, to the Mindful Man Project.
Happy to be here. Happy to talk.
Matt's all the way over in Arizona. It's been an awesome journey so far for me watching Matt's Instagram and from afar, from his looking at his website and being a consumer in some way of the amazing information that he's putting out. So Matt, can we start with a little background on how you've come to finding the electroculture, EMF, the greater spectrum of wellness that you're now kind of getting yourself into?
Well, it all kind of started when I got into crop circles. I had a lady do an Akashic reading a couple years ago, and she told me to look into crop circles. And I told her, I don't know what that's going to do, but she goes, you'll just know what to do when you look at them. She's like, you'll understand them. And I was just, I just said, okay, you know, I'm just going to take it for that. And she said a lot of things in that reading, which were exactly everything related to my life, like identical, like everything from my childhood to me growing up, to everything I've done in my life. Like she said everything about my personality, and this was all over the phone. So I was pretty blown away that she was, you know, so spot on. But she just said, you know, just go look into crop circles and you'll just figure it out. So I started researching into crop circles and understanding the energetic principles of those circles, right? You see those images that are put onto the land, and each one has a certain resonance or like cymatics and is showing a different picture or sound frequency or like spelling or like words being placed onto the land. So I started getting into those, and then I started understanding things about pyramids and how crop circles kind of go in hand with pyramids and how they basically relate back and forth. And as I started getting into that, I started getting into water energy and like the work of Victor Schauberger and all of the work in which he's done, where he was basically this man who lived out in the forest, and his family came from foresters, and he lived in Austria, and he started understanding everything related to the forest, how the water spirals and vortexes, how the trees grow, how fish, instead of swimming up the stream, they actually levitate based on the vortexes in which they're creating to basically make them levitate up the stream. So basically, when I started getting into his work, I started understanding everything that he was doing with copper and bronze and brass, and he created this thing called the bioplow, which was this beautiful plow that resembled a shark as it cut through the earth so that it can be used to increase yields, right? He understood that when you use brass, use bronze, use copper, you can increase yields of plant growth. And as I started getting into this stuff, I realized that a lot of his work was all pretty much suppressed. You know, we never learned about it. I never heard about it. I never heard about bronze and brass and copper and different types of gardening tools and different materials. We're always iron, 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 iron. And as I started getting into his work and hearing all the things that have happened, I learned that he presented to the Bulgarian government at the time the usage of copper in gardening tools and said that it would increase yields 3 to 4 times if we use that material in these gardening tools. And as he presented that, the government at that time told him, we can't do that, because they had a kickback basically with the fertilizer and the pesticides and all those companies that are all pretty much together. And we can't present this information to the general public. So what they did was they put out a bunch of stuff on the newspaper, on the radio, to basically say that if you use copper tools in your gardening, you will yield too much food and not make enough money. And when I learned all of this, I thought, this has got to be put out there, right? Because this is crazy. Like, they literally have said, you know, that we should not be using these tools because you're not going to make any money if you have too much food. And it's crazy because when we move into all the stuff with the food shortages and all the stuff that's going on that they're orchestrating, I thought, this has got to get out there. So I started doing some videos. I started getting into some more people, Justin Christo Flo, George Lakofsky, all these different people who pretty much were talking about electroculture, right? Or different forms, right? Each person was doing electroculture in a different way. Some were doing copper coils. Some were doing antennas. Some were using copper tools. Each person was kind of doing a different thing at that time. But as I got into all of this work, I started making some videos, and I just noticed that they just started going crazy, and people started putting antennas in their soil and started trying new things. And as that kind of just went nuts, you know, here we are now today, and electroculture has pretty much blown up. It's gone absolutely nuts. I mean, we have people from all over the world doing electroculture, harnessing this beautiful energy. And what I started to realize with this is, when we're using copper and all these beautiful materials, even quartz and crystals and these things, we're just harnessing the energy that's all around us, right? The free energy that's all around us. When we're using all this iron-based material, tools, and all these things, we're deadening that beautiful energy that's working on that on the Earth spectrum. So basically, it all began just like I was saying with crop circles, and then opening my eyes into different people, different parts of work, of different parts of their work, and then it all kind of led to where we are today.
Yeah, that's cool. I love those journeys that kind of just the little bits and pieces kind of pull you in one direction. And the funny thing that it started with crop circles of all things, but they are just such an interesting thing to look into. Anyone listening want to start looking into crop circles, it's a nice little rabbit hole to go down. But yeah, the electroculture is such an amazing thing. Like, personally, like, since starting it, even in my small, modest, like, little herb garden in pots, because we're actually in a rental right now, so the owner's a little bit reluctant to let us create an actual garden. So I've just done pots and putting all of our stuff in pots and just seeing the plants that we've had for 5-6 years, just even pot plants, they've doubled in size and they're looking healthier than they ever been. And it's such an amazing kind of concept, and I'm still getting my head around it. You're like I would consider a brain on it, that, like, what is actually occurring when you're either doing antenna, you're doing rods, whatever it is, what is that electroculture happening for anybody at home is kind of just kind of getting their head around what is actually occurring?
So there's a couple of things that are occurring when you're doing electroculture. So if we look at copper, right, just the color of copper, if you look at the color of copper, it resembles the same color as the sun. Right. So color therapy can actually be very healing for your plants. So, for example, just the reflection of the sun against the copper creates that beautiful orange hue onto your plants, which is very healing. That's why they spend a lot of money trying to block out stuff up in the sky, make it cloudy and all that other stuff, because it gets rid of the beautiful hues in which the sun is emitting. So that's the first one. You have this beautiful color therapy going on. Next would be you're increasing the life force energy of the plants, right? So the biggest thing that our plants are facing, and like you said, even if it's a 5-6 year old plant, is that the sap of the plant is not moving at the best rate that it normally does, right? Because what's happening is with all these frequencies and all the stuff we're being bombarded with, which are pretty much starting to cover our terrain, the sap of the plant cannot move in the same function that it normally does. It gets slowed down. So what you're doing is you're enhancing the sap so that the nutrients can move through to the plant and deliver to different parts of that plant. So that's why, for example, let's say you're growing basil, you know, you will start to notice that the leaves will maybe be 2 times the size, because now those nutrients are getting to each and every leaf, instead of maybe some of the leaves were not getting the nutrients, so they get all wilted and fall apart. So you're helping that part of the plant as well. The other thing you're doing is you're picking up on the energy of the earth, right? The Schumann resonance. You have the 7.83 hertz. It's picking up on, it's creating an antenna to pick up on that energy, right? There's all this beautiful energy around us, ether, chi, prana, orgone. You can look into all of those words, but there's all this beautiful energy that you're harnessing. And what's interesting, when you start doing electroculture too, your animals will start sitting next to these pots or plants as well, because they can pick up on that. So you're increasing the energy of the area so that the plants can grow better. And then the last one, which I think is pretty much in, you know, my way of kind of seeing it, is you're increasing the conductivity, right? All of our plants are suffering from just, and like, they're not conducting, right? You see a traditional tree, right? A traditional tree, the right side of the plant or the right side of the tree is not looking so good, versus the left side of the tree is looking really good. What's happening is the electrical conductivity of the left side is really good, but the right side is not so good anymore. So that this part is starting to pretty much kind of wilt away and kind of go into a hibernated state. So when you start doing electroculture, you're bringing back that conductivity of your soil and your plants so that they start to grow and get larger. They yield, you know, you start to yield more. They also become frost resistant and they also become heat resistant, right? So if people are suffering from a lot of weird weather patterns and things, electroculture works for that. And the other fun part is it's bringing back the ability for the soil to hold the moisture and the water. So you don't have to water your plants as much anymore when you're using electroculture, because the soil, it won't get all gunky and all blocked up. It starts to be able to move that water through, which can then deliver the nutrients as well too. So those would be the biggest advantages of using electroculture.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's just, even as I begin to dive into more of like the more of what you could call etheric kind of concepts of aether and stuff that's going on, and as you mentioned, like EMFs and stuff that could be or that are being bombarded into our environment, we have noticed essentially like we get pounded in this area nonstop with EMF and spray and stuff, and the environment around our house, like we feel like the energy is, we're a lot less affected when that kind of stuff is going on. Like you can at times at nighttime, you can hear that ringing, the buzzing of the EMFs that are going on. But our home just feels a lot like more grounded, a lot more at ease with it. Since even just putting, like, we've had the organite domes, we've had like the pyramids and stuff like that, but just doing the electroculture and having it in our internal inside plants and stuff as well, I feel like it's changed the whole kind of energy when you walk in. And it's funny that you mentioned the animals, because we live on a property here. And so there's a dog that lives, and then the dog comes by, but we've had a number of snakes in the last few weeks that have just kind of come and just sat in and shed their skin, and like huge snakes. And I don't think it's any coincidence that they're choosing this area, this place to come and find some good energy. With that going forward. So as you touched on, I touched on, is the EMF, like with that kind of game that's playing out, that is occurring, have you looked into the EMF and does that begin to kind of negate with electroculture?
So with the animals thing that you just said, that's a really big one, because they can pick up on that, because they are start to come around, and the birds come around, the bees, the pollinators, all of the beautiful animals can pick up on that. So I'm actually happy to hear that that's happening by you too, because they know, those snakes can tell as well too. They can pick up on the frequency. But with the EMF situation and all of this, what you're doing is you're helping to mitigate the energy. Think of your home as like a dome. You know, that's, I guess, the best way to describe it. And your garden is a dome. And what you're doing is you're balancing out that dome, that area, right? And the copper can actually be useful for blocking radio frequencies. So that's a really good one. And a lot of these things in which these devices and these towers and all of this nonsense in which they're rolling out, a lot of those emit a ton of radio frequencies, right? They're constantly pinging. So what can happen is this can help balance things out and pretty much reflect those, right, as well too, kind of in a reflection factor. But the thing is what you're doing is since you're harmonizing the area, you know, you might feel less impacted by those frequencies because of the antennas. And this is what used to be on top of all the cathedrals and the old world buildings and all these sacred buildings. They used to have all these antennas on top of them. And the reason they had those was because they were balancing out the atmosphere. And interestingly enough, related to what we were just talking about with the frequencies and the weather situation, a lot of people, when they're placing these antennas in their backyard, they start noticing that they have blue skies above them. Nice, big, beautiful blue skies, because things start to clear up, right? So if you think about it on an energy standpoint, you're in like a little bubble. And you're just enhancing that bubble and that energy that's in there. So then that can help heal the body and then also heal everything around it, right? Because those animals, like you just mentioned, are, you know, the dogs and the snakes, they're picking up on that energy. They're finding out that this is a great place for them to go because it's safer for them and there's beautiful energy there. You know, it takes, even if you think about a snake, if they're in a vulnerable place, they're not going to be shedding their skin. You know, because they don't want to take that chance. They could get attacked by a predator. So, you know, they pick up on these things, and they also need protection when it comes to all of this, because a lot of those frequencies are messing with the birds, the bees, you know, the fish, everything that has a GPS in the brain, even humans, those areas are getting impacted. So this can actually be a very beneficial thing for all of this going on at the same time.
Yeah, it just blows my mind. Imagine if everybody was doing some kind of electroculture in their home, like just the simple coil in a couple of pot plants. Like if everybody had that, like this thing, this little dome would just continue to, it kind of takes on that Simpsons kind of dome kind of situation where everybody is like inside the dome. Well, and that's another podcast that you could potentially listen to, is living inside a dome. But yeah, it's such an amazing concept. And you've touched on like that old world buildings and stuff like that. Not only were they so grand in like their design and the architecture and the thought that went into them, and then you look at the modern box, little tiny houses all in a row kind of, or even just like the cities, and they're all concrete. And when you think about like the refractive kind of, they're just kind of, all that stuff starts to scatter and bounce, and it's a lot harder to kind of harness any kind of atmospheric energy. And you can see, like, even in cities when they have these huge electrical storms which are created from the uprising of the static electricity and stuff within the cities, whereas like old world, they would have been able to harness that static electricity and take it down into the earth. And it's just so sad in a way that humans have kind of moved into this, not like you kind of touched on, with the energetic eye just completely shut and not actually aware of what is actually occurring in the atmosphere and the greater existence of what is the energetic. And I spend a lot of time in nature and a lot of time just even observing my, because I live on beautiful land, and just even looking at and observing the animals, and like you said, the pollinators and the bees and stuff like that. At the moment, our Department of Primary Industries is actually going through and wiping out a bunch of bees throughout New South Wales because of mite, but they're wiping everything out. So you can only imagine the fallout from what's going to incur after that. And just being able to be in a space, because I've got Tulsi, I've got basil, I've got a lot of pollinators that are, or pollen attractors that are coming, and the flowers on the basil and the flowers on the Tulsi, there's just bumblebees that I've never seen before, like blue bumblebees, big bumblebees, like they're just, and it's amazing to see, because a native beast. So I'm glad that to know that what I'm doing is actually some sort of help to nature, because that's the big thing. If nature falls over, humanity will fall over, and I don't think a lot of people get that.
Well, and that's the thing, like you said, I was going to say with that, is just without, you know, Victor Schauberger said, if we go against nature, nature will destroy us, right? And we have to support nature, and it has to be a grassroots movement. You know, we can't expect somebody to take care of nature for us. We have to take care of nature. And what you said with that, and just a quick snippet, is I've seen praying mantises on my balcony, right? I've seen all types of giant grasshoppers that are like literally this large, you know, just, I've seen so many things I've never seen in, for example, just in just Scottsdale, Arizona. I've had hawks flying over my house. I have falcons. I have all different types of birds. I have like 20 birds that come and sit on my balcony every single day, and they jump around and chirp and all of these things. But that's the thing, they can pick up on that energy. We've just been disconnected because, like you said, we've been living in, as we sit in boxes, we're disconnected from everything else that's going on outside. So we lose that connection and don't understand how important that connection truly is until we start going back outside and connecting with nature and we start seeing all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I watched a little documentary yesterday called The Need to Grow. I don't know whether it's from by the Food Revolution. And what they were doing, it's called The Big Green Giant. And it was in Montana, and they'd actually created, I don't know whether you heard of it, biochar. It was a complete closed loop system with biochar. They would then create the biochar that would, the heat from the biochar furnace would go into another big kind of atrium kind of situation that was then creating this algae. And then they were selling that, these two products, as superfood for food. And it ended up burning down somehow. And of course, and like, because they got news coverage and stuff like that. And I'm just thinking, like, I know personally with biochar and stuff how amazing that is for the soil. And since watching that video, because I only watched it yesterday, is coupling the three together, could you just imagine the yields that you would receive from farming and from even just your own home garden, just having the biochar and the algae in there feeding like the soil, and then having the beautiful energy coming through from the electroculture. It would just be amazing, because like I've done a bit of work and a bit of learning on permaculture practices and stuff as well. So even just being able to get then the permaculture, the biodynamic farming practices of the different preparations and stuff that they do, because that's kind of along the lines of I can't remember which biodynamic preparation it is, but the one where they do the crystals, like you smash up the quartz crystals and put it in the water and disperse it across, and there's kind of that refractive properties that allow the uptake of nutrients into the plant. So all of these practices, if they combine, imagine like big ag would just be like shaking in their boots.
Well, and that's kind of how I see it, right? Like, because I mean, if we look at Monsanto and the track record and all of the poisons and the 4 billion pounds of pesticides, and like you said, killing off the bee population, right? Like even the things related to the mites, it's not the mites, it's the frequencies, it's the radiation, it's the cell phone towers. You know, they're destroying the cellular health of the bees. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of studies on this, you know, so it's just they're turned a blind eye. And then when we have, like you said, all the pesticides, it's just wreaking havoc on people's health. Then people go and eat these foods and they develop all kinds of health conditions. And, you know, then they're just going through this repetitive circle because they keep being poisoned. But yeah, if we were to combine all of these things together, like even just, for example, like you said, the biochar, even basalt, which is volcanic clay, which is loaded with quartz, you know, even the sounds of birds. The sounds of birds has been shown to stimulate plants and help accelerate plant growth by 300%. You know, this was all covered by Dorothy Redelak. And, you know, back in the day, they understood bird sounds increase plant growth, right? And what are they doing? Hurting the birds, you know, and removing and harming them with the frequencies and these things. But if we combined all these things together, yes, there would be, there's no need. The thing is, we never needed pesticides and gene editing in the first place. It's only been pushed onto the people so much where it seems it's acceptable, right? Or it's normal. But in reality, before all that time, like you said, you had the Steiner prep, which is what you were talking about with the bullhorns and the quartz, and they would put the soil in there and they put that into the earth. You know, they did everything in a natural fashion. It was only till the World War II reset, right? That's what that was. It was a reset to get rid of a lot of information related to these topics so that the big chemical companies could start making money on everything, right? They had all this extra chemical nonsense, basically, and they needed to figure out where to put it now because you're not using it for war. So they started putting it into the foods and all the farming and everything. And yeah, we don't need any of that. And the thing is, you know, a lot of people ask me, well, how do I clean up my soil? You know, how do I help improve my soil? And just like you said, those couple things, you could use electroculture, you could use biochar, you could use basalt, you could use azomite, you can use bird sounds. Everything will start to harmonize things and bring it back. Because that's what I realized too. We could do things and grow so fast, so quick that we would have an abundance for everybody. And a lot of the times, you know, we're sitting there concerned on, you know, squirrels are eating my food and whatever else. It's like they need food too, right? Every animal and everything, we need to be taking care of everybody. And we really have to have that mindset where I have to do my work in order to take care of my vicinity. And that's what, you know, the electroculture movement, in my opinion, is doing, right? You're taking back your power to say, I need my food, my independence, and I'm going to do whatever I can, even if it's just in my area alone, to help harmonize the area as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. You become a custodian of your area. And I think that's where a lot of people also become disconnected. They're no longer a custodian of anything because they get given everything that they need. And the alarming thing is it's most cities don't have more than a week's worth of food for everybody. If everything kind of got shut off, like people would be rushing to the supermarkets to try and buy everything. And we only got to see, like in Australia, when COVID first hit, we had a toilet paper shortage for weeks, like because people went out and bought toilet paper of all things. So to then imagine if like the food like distribution got cut off, that's just like amazing to think that what people would be then under equipped for. And that's where I really feel like a lot of people and a lot of listeners need to be probably thinking about even just having a modest food garden and knowing where your farmer lives, because then it's like, then you can go straight to the source, because it's like, okay, well, I need some food, rather than relying on a big chain for your soul nourishment. Because otherwise, then if and when this stuff eventually happens, it's going to potentially be a big headache for a lot of people. It's such a big thing that I think with this electroculture, with the movement into home agriculture, and obviously then empowering people, like what you're doing is amazing work, because it's like so many people are just jumping on the bandwagon, and it's awesome to see the amount of growth that people are actually like getting. And you've mentioned that you have a bit of a garden. Like, do you have a setup, or is it enough to kind of help you go through tough times, or are you kind of on the road?
So right now, just kind of everything, we've been just kind of a lot of moving parts at the same time, but I do have a third floor balcony garden in which I have, and I have a moringa tree, I have some flax growing, I have some mint, I have some cayennes. The cayennes just keep coming. It's like every 5 days I have more cayenne peppers. I have basil, and then I have purple basil as well. But we grow a lot of herbs, because if with the potted plants, it's just easier to grow the herbs. Yeah. And then we also then go to our farmer's market. We go every single weekend. I know all my farmers. I know where everything comes from. I connect with them. You know, we're very, very grassroots movement of being connected to as much as to the people who are growing our food as possible. And then also, like you said, building that connection so that I know, for example, if I went to the grocery store and things maybe weren't there, the farmer's market is always full. And it's that's what I've always realized. Like, there's never a shortage of, you know, food at the farmer's market. There's just a shortage of people. That's what I've learned. You know, it's so much food. They have so much food all the time. And sometimes they have to take it all back, or even, I don't know, dispose of it because let's say it's not good anymore or whatever else. But just, yeah, it's the more you're connected with that and the more you start to do that, it's just a different world. And like you said, every person should have an open mind thinking about these things, even if every person grew just a little bit, right? Like even if a complex, I don't know, let's say there's 10 units and, you know, or 10 houses, whatever it is, whether it's a community, whatever it may be, if every person started growing just a little bit, every person could cover one another. You know, even just one or two people having some chickens can cover a whole entire area. Like, that's the thing. We have to go back to that independence and not being dependent on a grocery store in which, you know, is just trying to sell you whatever they got from wherever it came from. Because a lot of times you can go in the store and you don't even know where it came from. You don't know where it's grown, whatever else. And then also on being underneath all those LED lights and in all the frequencies is diminishing the life force of the food before you even took it home. And if you put it in your fridge, which has the lights as well, that diminishes the life force as well. So, you know, when you can connect and just go out and grab something, or go just take it from, you know, the soil and the plant, you're getting the full nutrient profile versus all the other the steps in between are lowering that down.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I just want to ask, like, how big is the place? Like, how much population is the area that you live in?
So this is, in the space that I'm in, there's a lot of people. It's there's 10 million people in Arizona. So, but if you went with the stores, I mean, they were having shortages the entire time in 2020 and 2021. Right? A lot of things were out. And, you know, so if anything was crazy, like you said, I mean, it would be at zero, right? Like there wouldn't be anything. And I think that's the awareness people have to be aware of, is if you go and there's nothing, you know, then you have to be having a plan B, right? And that's where I think, you know, the electric culture movement is really bringing that back to say, okay, we can all grow stuff. You know, how can we grow stuff? How can I use these tactics to also help me grow more food so I can help others as well? And it all can work beautiful. But if we just stay where it's just me, and I'm just going to like hoard everything, you know, then we're not, it's not a good long-term look. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a nice little reminder for people who like are living in Melbourne or Sydney that like they've got 6 to 11 million people living in it, and just you being able to go to a farmer's market is actually achievable. You're in an American city, able to still find farmer's markets that are actually quite nourishing and full of whole foods. And it is available when you look for it, and then you actually then are able to then just go for it, and it becomes a routine. It becomes a ritual for yourself to actually, you feel the energy that you're putting into it, going and finding that food, as much as you're not foraging like we would have back in the old days, you're still going to and actually mindfully finding the food that you're getting, rather than just kind of drudging through, like you said, through the LEDs. Like, you're also, that life force energy is getting sucked from you with the LED lights and stuff that you have in, go into all these shopping centers. you're out in the sun, you're shopping out in the sun. Generally, the farmers markets are occurring in the early morning, so you can go get the early morning sunshine on yourself. So you're actually absorbing vitamins and minerals through your skin while you're walking through the farmers markets, and then you're actually getting soul nourishing food. And it's achievable within it, because I've had a number of people who have messaged me, oh, I live in a city, I can't do it because like this or this, this and this. But that's just an excuse a lot of people are putting on themselves because they can't do it. But it's like, if you have to travel for 30 minutes on a Saturday or a Sunday just to go and get your food, and it's actually over and above nutrient density that you do get in a Coles or Woolworths, which are our supermarkets here, it's a no-brainer, and your body begins to thank you for it. And like you said, if you live in that 10-unit block, someone might be the tomato grower, somebody might be the basil grower, somebody might. I've grown potatoes in sacks on our deck, just like a Hessian sack, and chuck some seed potatoes in there, and then all of a sudden we had like a couple of kilo of potatoes down the track. And that was even before I knew about electroculture. I'd be interested to see the yield of potatoes if I had done electroculture in that sack, which gives me an idea I might do that again. I'm a little bit of an experimenter, Matt, so I'll give anything a crack. I want to dive now into, unless you want to add anything else onto that discussion now, I just would like to kind of add on, check out what you guys have got going on outside of electroculture.
With that one, I was just going to say, I have a friend who's doing it with potatoes, and his potatoes have grown so tall that he has to take them out of the basement because they've actually reached the ceiling. So, and he's like blown away. The stems are it's wild. And he sends me videos. He's like, you got to see my potatoes. He's like, I put the antennas in. Now he has to get like sticks to try to hold up the stems of the potatoes because they literally reach, they're touching the ceiling. So he's like, I don't know. I never expected it to get this big, you know? And now, so he's got this, basically just a basement full of potatoes and just tons of them. So that's the magic.
He's a potato dealer. Imagine getting raided by the cops, and they cut, oh, some lady next door docked him in for growing something down in his basement, and they come over and that's funny. So I want to touch on, or get into detail with what you guys also are offering on Cultivate Elevate, because dragon's blood is something that's kind of popped up into my field before I came into contact with yourself, and I've never consumed it myself. I'm still kind of getting my head. I'm always someone when I see a supplement, I want to get my head around it before I actually try it. And I want to dive into what it does and how it helps the body and what it offers, if you can elaborate.
Dragon's blood is from an ancient tree that is considered the Draco tree. And when they would cut this tree, it would basically bleed like blood. And that's why it got the name dragon's blood. But it's an ancient tree sap, and it's very, very healing for the skin, for the brain, for the gut biome. You know, anybody who's suffering from types of skin issues, dragon's blood can work wonders. People having eczema or any type of skin conditions going on, the dragon's blood, just, it's remarkable. And the reason being is because when you look at the auric value, which is the antioxidant value of dragon's blood, it's over 3 million. So when you look at chaga, when you look at blueberries, when you look at, ginger, those are all about 50,000, 60,000, 70,000, and 100,000. And dragon's blood is 3 million. So it's on a whole different parallel of healing. And because it's from the tree sap, it's basically the life force of the tree, right? So you're consuming the life force. So it's similar to turpentine or pine or maple syrup, you know, all the different types of things that come out of the tree, which can be very healing. But it's just a remarkable one. And there's so many studies. If you look up the studies on dragon's blood, there's so many. It's probably one of the most studied foods other than Shilajit. Shilajit is up there for tons of studies because of Ayurvedic medicine. But dragon's blood is, one of the highest antioxidant foods and very healing for the body. And just getting things regenerating. People use it on their gums. If they have, for example, receding gums, people use it on their skin if their skin's not doing too well. But there's a lot of regeneration that occurs with it. And I believe that's because the tree sap is in a colloidal state. So it's very easy to absorb for the body because it's coming from nature. You know, a lot of the times with all these synthetic things that are out there in vitamins and minerals, they have a lot of weird things in them, a lot of weird fillers and all of that. And a lot of that blocks the ability for the things to absorb. But dragon's blood is just a pure tree sap that just works wonders on the body.
Yeah, you've touched on something there with fillers and stuff. You used to use one of the other American brands. I won't name the brand on podcast, but I found the formulation and stuff was great to begin with. And then there was a fillers and stuff started to creep in once that scale began. Like you could taste the glycerol in certain different vitamins and minerals. And yeah, I feel once you start to kind of get into that kind of the fillers and the extra bits and pieces to scale or whatever it is, it then obviously detracts from the potency of what the product is. And having your dragon's blood product, it just sounds like you guys are pretty much clean and clean cut. Just on your website it says no fillers and etc. So how does that process take place from getting this? Is it a freeze-dried situation, or is it just straight into, yeah?
I was going to say it's very similar to the freeze-dried. We do a lot of things with cold pressing too, with our Shilla Shot as well, using a lot of cold techniques to keep the nutrients at their highest potential. But it's pretty much just the extraction and then goes through, like we were saying, the cold techniques. And then it just stays in the powder form and is ready to go. And then you can consume it. We also have it in capsule form as well too. And it's just, you just can pop a couple capsules and you're good to go. But yes, we're big on, like you said, not putting any fillers and weird things in there, because then it's diluting. You know, a lot of people don't realize that certain supplements or vitamins in which you could be consuming may be, for example, 70% of what they're trying to buy. And then maybe 30% of fillers, or maybe 50%, right? So those usually can wreak havoc on the gut and do a lot of issues and block a lot of things going on inside the body. But yeah, we stick to 100% pure dragon's blood in our powders and in our capsules.
Cool. And you touched on Shilajit as well. I say a little bit different to you, but Shilajit, you said. Do you want to elaborate on Shilajit as well?
So Shilajit is a wonderful superfood. We source ours from the Altai region near Siberia, and it provides the body with 84 of 102 minerals. It's an ancient tar that comes up from the mountains of over anywhere from 10,000 to 16,000 feet, and they used to use this to heal the body from a plethora of issues, whether it's chronic fatigue, whether it's inflammation, whether it's, you know, brain fog, whether it's, you know, digestion issues. Shilajit hits on just about every single thing. And it's a remarkable superfood for healing the body. And the thing is when we were talking about all this in the beginning with the electroculture and the chemicals and all this other stuff, the biggest issue we're all facing is that we just are not getting the vitamins that we used to once get, right? Our foods are losing their life force and losing their minerals and their vitamins. So when we start to bring in superfoods such as Shilajit, dragon's blood, pearl, all these different things, we start to heal the body at the cellular level, because that's the biggest problem that we're facing. We might get, a ton of maybe vitamin C, but we're not getting vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin A, vitamin K, you know, all the other things that are missing. And when we try to sometimes supplement one vitamin at a time, our body can't absorb it in its true fashion. So Shilajit, the magic is that it's providing all of those minerals at the same time so that the body can absorb and take it all in at the same time, rather than trying to take each individual vitamin and mineral, you know, and go through all 102, you'd have a whole cabinet full of a bunch of stuff and probably not really absorb any of it. So the thing is, when we get it from a food source, we're providing the best nutrients for the body and the easiest way to absorb it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you'd end up walking around like a pill bottle, like it's just shaking and rattling as you walk if you had to take every one of them. And the thing is, you end up having to be almost a biochemist to know which mineral and vitamin combination to take at certain times and what not to eat before it or what not to drink before it. Because like also a lot of people are taking vitamins and minerals and they're drinking coffee prior to taking those vitamins and minerals. And quite often coffee is an inhibitor and a blocker of mineral uptake. So that's one piece of advice I would give people who are taking vitamins and minerals is to either abstain from drinking coffee prior to having any vitamins and minerals, because otherwise you're not going to actually be able to process that in the bloodstream a lot more efficiently as opposed to like having the coffee. So and it's an interesting take, you know, because having the vitamins and minerals supplementations side of things, it's always when we can come back to the root, the soil. If we can begin to nourish our soil with like what you're talking about with electroculture through biochar and other forms of composting and having the nutrient density in the actual soil to begin with, then when we begin to then nourish that, our food is nourishing, we're getting the vitamins and minerals that we need, and then the supplementation is just an added bonus, because then you're like, cool, like we're getting what we need, just add on a little bit extra, and it's that special sauce, that like the little cream on top, that really then begins to really supercharge what your body is able to do and achieve from amazing food and amazing supplements.
I completely agree. And that's the thing, is when we address that root cause, like you just said, it helps to start the body to heal and starts to bring back the things that need to be in balance, right? Because everybody who's suffering from some sort of illness or, you know, condition or whatever you want to say, they're just suffering usually from it's a nutrient imbalance. Right? They're just missing certain vitamins so that their cells are not functioning anymore. Once they start to bring back in those nutrients, their cells start to function again, and they begin to go through the healing process, right? Because every single, I believe it's like every 6 weeks, we renew all of our cells. So if you think about it, if you can provide the body with enough nutrients so that it can keep healing, then the body will keep thriving and functioning. But if you're depriving it of all the nutrients that it needs, then when it goes through that healing process, it's not gonna happen. And then the body will start to break down and pretty much fall apart. But once we start to, like you said, address that root cause, everything goes back into balance. And then we also turn back on the electricity of our body, because we are electrical conductors, you know, so you're bringing back that life force and that beautiful energy of the body.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, say, it's also then comes down to the hydration level of the cells, the intracellular hydration as well. So it's actually drinking actually charged water, ionized water. So it actually allows you, the body, to uptake of those nutrients rather than having a thick sludge of blood that's kind of just not absorbing and it's not turning over the healthy cells. And notice that you're drinking out of the copper cup. Do you have a process where you, before it goes into the cup, filtration, energizing, so to speak?
So I do distilled water, which is, yep, you know, into distilled water. It's basically the electrical water that comes down from the sky, but also is used for electrical devices, which is what we are, right? We're electrical beings. But I put distilled water in my cup, and then it's just a copper cup. And what the copper is doing is it's just creating electrically charged water so that it can begin to heal the body. You'll start to notice you have better energy, you have better digestion, you might have less brain fog. And that's why even people used to wear copper also back in the day, because it would get rid of inflammation and swelling, because they understood of the beautiful properties of copper. But I just put it in here. I set the intention that it's going to heal me. It's going to bring, you know, positive energy to myself. And that's pretty much it. And then I drink it throughout the day. And I noticed I just have better energy, better clarity, better focus, you know, more in tune, because water takes on whatever it's placed into, right? So if you take water and you put it into plastic, it will take on the plastic. And those things that are in the plastic, it will leach them out and put it into the water. And then you'll go and drink that, which will end up in your body. Versus if you drink out of copper, if you drink out of silver, you know, different clays, different stones, the water will take on those materials and begin to provide those nutrients and the benefits back into the body. Because that's another thing. We've gotten used to just using either glass or plastic, right? Everybody pretty much uses glass or plastic, but both of those are not giving us anything related to energy or a different composition. So back in the day when they used to make, for example, holy water, they would put it in a brass pot and they would let it sit overnight and it would charge itself overnight. Or they would put it in a clay pot and let it charge itself overnight because of the vortexing that's occurring. And they would drink that when they woke up. So same thing with the copper cup, works the exact same way.
Yeah, it's a game changer when you start to drink out of, and you can actually taste it and feel it when, sorry, the sun's literally just coming straight in here now. Yeah, it's a game changer when you start to drink out of these different vessels and you can taste the difference and you can actually, and like you've touched on there, water is like a sympathetic organism. It wants to be alive. So if it's sitting next to dead water, it'll try and create life in that dead water. And I've noticed that even in, like, when you take some basil and you kind of cut it off and you put it in some water and sit it on your kitchen bench. I did an experiment the other day. Our basil was sitting next to our green waste bin, and the basil would continually just keep wilting over and dying. But now I've put the basil next to plants that are alive, and the basil that has just been cutting is, again, it's coming back to life. And with the water that we're giving it, charged water, it's the cutting's living rather than just kind of dying and wilting. And that's another thing with people who are buying their groceries and stuff, they just kind of chuck their stuff in the fridge. It's almost like a food coffin. You're putting your food in there to die and wilt, and then throw it out next week because it's wilted. And if you're not going to eat it, place it in a place that it's going to actually continue to thrive and live, maybe next to other plants that are currently living and haven't been chopped off, and in water that is actually nourishing it, continue to give life, because that's what water actually really wants to do. It wants to give life. So that's one thing that I could really offer up to people with their food, especially with and in regards to water, because once that water is nourishing the cells of the plants, that then gets transferred through into us, and then we begin to thrive again.
Well, and on that topic too, they used to use copper watering cans back in the day, and that was because they understood that the electrical conductivity of the water was important. And then they used to have a little spout that was curved, kind of like an S, and then that would create the structure, and that structure water would increase their yields. But now, like you were just saying, we've gotten used to everything, if it's in a plastic or straight lines, whatever it may be, and we just think, oh, I'm just pouring water on my plant. But what's happening is too, your mind is setting that intention into the water, because the water is consciously taking on anything in its surrounding. So if you have bad thoughts and it gets transmitted into that water, the plant is not going to do that well, just because of your thoughts and how the plant syncs up to you, you know. And this was all shown, Dr. Emoto's work with everything he did and so many other people, Marcel Vogel and things. But yeah, there's so much more to the conscious aspect of plants, water, gardening, being connected, our body, you know, that we have to be in tune with. And we've just lost the tune because, like I said, as we became more condensed into a box, we started disconnecting with everything beautiful around us.
That's beautiful. I think we might leave it on that note, because it is. It's, I can't say anymore. When we become disconnected from everything outside, everything else disappears. So on that note, Matt, where can people meet you, get in contact with you, order your products? Let me know.
So they can find us on cultivateelevate.com. And we have a new page we just started, which is cultivateelevate.com/electroculture. where people can find all things related to any questions that they may have with electroculture. And then we have all of our products on there, all of our stuff with our Dragon's Blood, our Pearl, our Shilajit, our Six Mix, all the different combinations that we have. And then as for where they can find us, we're on YouTube at Cultivate Elevate. And then we also have a Telegram channel, which is Cultivate Elevate. And a lot of people can join in there and show their gardens, ask questions, communicate, talk with one another. We have a ton of people who are from Australia who are all in there showing all their gardens and antennas going wild and things like that. But, you know, you can come in there and just learn, right? That's what we try to provide. We try to provide a community where people can meet other people and learn from one another and also talk to one another so that they can, you know, elevate their garden and their health at the same time.
Amazing. Yeah, that's a big thing. When we become disconnected from community and disconnected from ourselves, this is the one great thing about internet and different apps has allowed us to connect from various different points on the globe or world that has allows you to, I still keep getting, I've recently started diving into that flat earth model, and I keep going to catch myself up, but it's amazing. Thank you so much for creating what you're doing, creating the community that is around that. Because obviously, like, if this continues to snowball, it's an amazing thing to allow people to then, with the people who may not be as green thumbed as they think, as it gives them that kind of the hope that they can actually do the work and actually supply themselves some kind of food or nourishment if and when something does occur. So thank you for bringing it to the masses as what you've done, and thank you for coming on today.
Happy to share and happy to bring it and give some solutions, because like we always see, we see so much fear, but there's always solutions in everything, and I think that's really important to be aware of.
Absolutely. That's when just having somebody kind of create that lighthouse to be able to see what is ahead and what the potential is. So thank you again, and thank you for everybody to listening today.
Till next time.
Thanks for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed that discussion as much as I did. I know I took a lot from it. If you want to get in touch with Matt, you can go to Instagram, Cultivate Elevate, or cultivateelevate.com for any more information and guidance on any of the stuff that we have discussed today. If you feel the call, share, like, and comment on this episode, and let me know what your thoughts were. Thanks again for joining me. Stay tuned for the next episode.